My name is Matthew Wayne Selznick, and this is Sonatotum, episode 48. Hi, everybody. It's Saturday, August 27th, 2022. And this episode of Sonatotum is going to be a park cast. It is a park cast. I am recording from a park right now, getting out of the lush and lavish studios of MWS Media, where it's just too damn hot. And after last week's episode, I thought maybe it might not be a bad idea to have a little change of venue, to talk on my feet, to just get a little change of perspective. So I'm walking. We're recording today on my Audio-Technica lavalier mic. You're going to hear background noises, maybe some ducks, maybe some squirrels chirping. Some birds, children, and people doing what children and people do in parks. The sound of my footsteps, perhaps. Anyway, yeah, we're at a park. We're walking around. Sonatotum, if this is your first episode, Sonatotum is where we talk about making stuff, finding success as we each define it for ourselves, and staying healthy and sane in the process. Every episode, I like to start off talking about what I've accomplished in the previous week in my own creative endeavors, my own efforts to make things, to build ever so slowly that creative writing life. And let's see. So last weekend, I talked about how I had finished Indie Author Marketing Infrastructure, my upcoming nonfiction book for authors. And the week creatively was spent primarily working on the infrastructure for that book, for doing things that will support the book when it is eventually released on the 30th of August. And that includes, first of all, doing all the kind of cleanup and editing work on the manuscript. I just wanted to make sure that it made sense, that there were no glaring, awful mistakes, that the links in the book all worked, and creating all the electronic versions, the EPUB and Mobi versions of the ebook for upload to the various platforms. I had until Thursday to make sure that all the final files were uploaded to Amazon in order to meet my pre-order obligations, and I got everything up on Tuesday. So that was good. I kind of tinkered with the cover a little bit, made some adjustments there, and as I mentioned, worked on polishing up the manuscript itself. So it's out there. It's available for pre-order at Amazon, in Kobo, at Nook, at Apple Books. By the time you listen to this, well, heck, if you listen on the 30th of August or after, then it's available everywhere. But right now, it's available for pre-order in those marketplaces and popping up in more every day. So the book is done. What remains between while I'm talking to you right now and Tuesday is to just finish up the website-related things on my own website and some other kind of inside baseball technical stuff to support the book, some automation sequences for my mailing list and things like that. And that was the main thing, pretty much the only creative thing I did in this past week. But that was kind of the plan, to make sure that Indie Author Marketing Infrastructure was ready to go and that I've met my deadline, which I'm happy to say that I did. This coming week, the book comes out on the 30th, that's Tuesday, so today, tomorrow, and Monday, just making sure all of the things that I need are set up and in place so that when the book does launch and people read the book, nothing related to the book is missing or broken. And that mainly means things like making sure links on my website are set up, making sure my mailing list is appropriately organized, stuff like that. What shall we talk about in this episode? Well, there was something that I encountered this week. You know, as I've mentioned before, I frequent some of these online forums and groups and communities for writers at different stages of their careers, or maybe even they haven't started their career yet. And I came across a post from someone who was wondering about tropes. A trope in this context, as I understand it, as I choose to interpret it, is a motif or a pattern in a work of fiction, whether it's books, film, TV, whatever, comics, plays, any kind of narrative fiction, wherein it's something that appears over and over again. It's something that can be seen almost as a literary cliche, if you will. For example, the mousy best friend of the leading lady in the romantic comedy, or the slightly dorky wingman of the male main character in a romantic comedy, or the ticking clock, right, as a way to build tension, whether it's a bomb or have to get to the church before the person gets married or whatever. These are all tropes. And this writer was asking about, well, specifically the trope of the chosen family instead of the family that rejects you or doesn't support you in one way or another. And what they specifically wanted to know is, what's the opposite trope of that, where the family is supportive and strong, and not just family by blood, but the family that indeed you would choose if you had a choice? And I and a few other people were like, dude, that's just called a family. Not every trope has to have an opposite number. In fact, the reason tropes exist is because in one way or another, they contribute to drama and conflict. And if you have a perfectly happy family that is not a source of conflict for the character, then it's not actually important to the story unless it's perhaps as a source of resilience or strength for that character. But it's not a source of conflict or drama for the character. So why would there be a trope associated with it? There wouldn't be. It got me thinking about the larger point that this forum member was drawing, and that is that so many writers, and I will say perhaps so many new writers, perhaps inexperienced writers, are concerned about checking the right boxes, about filling in the blanks, drawing the lines between the dots when they're creating their stories. They're so concerned with meeting the expectations, presumed, imagined, or otherwise, of their potential reader. Sometimes this is called writing to market. Your basic romance novel has to have a happy ending. If the characters are in love at the end, they have to start off as rivals or enemies. Shit like that. Expectations that indeed some readers will tell you, if a book labeled a certain genre doesn't have this, that, and the other thing, I'm going to be very disappointed. Those readers are basically telling you, I don't want to be surprised. I don't want to be challenged. And as I've talked about before in previous episodes, and I will try to reference that episode in the show notes, which you can find at mattselznick.com, there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you're looking for in your entertainment, then that's fine. And there are writers who will cater to that and perhaps even be very successful. But when I see a new writer being basically so concerned about the definitions of these tropes and what the actual name of the trope is and does it exist and is it okay to include, and all these things that are completely tangential to just telling the story they want to tell. It concerns me a little bit, and not concerned as in, you know, whatever is going to become of them, but maybe a little concerned for the culture overall. I feel like there are new writers or somewhat inexperienced writers who worry so much about this that they're never really going to challenge themselves beyond constructing fiction that is essentially following a formula to one degree or another. If you're so concerned with hewing so closely to these tropes, then if you want to make cookies with cookie cutters, you're going to end up with cookies that look like everybody else's cookies who bought those cutters, right? And that's problematic, isn't it? Shouldn't you follow your imagination? Shouldn't you have something to say? On the other hand, one of my favorite quotes regarding creativity is from Orson Welles. I'm going to paraphrase it here because I'm not going to look things up because I'm walking through a park. I'm not on my computer. But essentially the quote is, "The absence of limitation is the enemy of art." And what Mr. Welles was saying there, of course, is that if anything goes, then you're not going to be forced to think creatively, constructively. I mean, you know, if you want your horse to be a purple unicorn with nine legs and it lives on the moon and all the rivers float upstream and, you know, that kind of thing, then that's the kind of story you're going to write. But if you are forced, or if you declare that there are certain rules in your narrative, then the exercise becomes, how do I craft something, and here's the rub, craft something original with something new to say, something personal to say that comes from me. How do I do that within these constraints? And that's where the challenge lies. That's where the work lies. That's where it becomes difficult. And recall, as I've said before, if it's difficult, you're probably doing something good. You're probably pushing yourself, growing as an artist. Now, I don't think that's the same as holding yourself to the various tropes that are expectations for a particular genre. I don't think that's the same. And here's why. Tropes are very specific. Farm boy becomes prince. Scullery maid becomes princess. I mean, there's a million of them. In fact, I do know this website. It's tvtropes.com, where they catalog all the various tropes. To the point where once you've read through this, when you start to see them in books, on TV, in movies, you kind of cringe. So why on earth would anyone want to contribute to the cringe? I wrote a fantasy book. And that fantasy book doesn't have any elves, dwarves, dragons, doesn't even have horses. I wrote a fantasy book where there's a character who is, in the language of fantasy tropes, a bard. He doesn't sing a note. You know why? Because it isn't important to the story. He's not there as a wandering minstrel to follow the hero along, looking at you, Witcher. He's got other problems, and those problems are central to the story. It's like if you told a story of an accountant, but never showed him at his calculator. Well, that's all right. The story isn't about him being an accountant, right? I wrote a fantasy story that really doesn't follow any tropes, as far as I know. And here's why I say as far as I know. Because I didn't look. I wrote the fucking story I wanted to tell. And that's what I'm urging you to do, I guess. Don't worry about tropes. Don't worry about fitting in with genre. Don't worry about reader expectation. Write what you want to write. Get it in front of the people for whom that's going to be awesome. Find your reader community around your work, not around how so similar it is to other people's work. Not by how much you fit in, but by how much you fit that reader and their joy is satisfied by what you have done. It's reasonable for you to say, well, Matt, how's that working out for you? I will be perfectly frank. Not great. Not in the short term. That fantasy book, Light of the Outsider, it's the best thing I've ever written. It's also the absolute worst selling thing I've ever written. And it's, as far as novels go, the most recent thing I've written. So it really ought to be my top seller. But no, my top seller is my very first book written and released in 2005. And by the way, it's full of tropes, that first book, Brave Men Run. There's the nerdy boy who gets the girl. There's the sinister government agent. There's the wise school teacher mentor. There's the bully who becomes an ally. I mean, it's trope after trope after trope. So what the fuck am I saying, you know? Why don't I just write another one of those things? Well, because when I wrote Brave Men Run, I wasn't chasing tropes. I was telling a story that happened to have those elements in it. Thinking about it, in part, those choices that I made in telling that story were the result of inexperience. I was a new writer. I was following an early impulse instead of challenging my first impulses and working toward finding a better idea, a more original idea, when I was solving those story problems in the writing of that book. The second novel that I wrote, Pilgrimage, which was a follow-up to Brave Men Run, takes place about a year after that first book. Many of the same characters, and they're all older, and in some ways they're wiser, but mostly their problems are just more sophisticated. And as a writer, I was that much more sophisticated because much more than a year had passed between writing Brave Men Run and writing Pilgrimage. There are probably still some tropes in Pilgrimage that fit with the science fiction, that particular sub-niche of science fiction. Some of them are there because, again, some of the same characters are there. And so, of course, they fulfill similar roles. But this third novel, Light of the Outsider, interestingly, although it's one of the oldest ideas that I've had, it was the last thing I wrote after having two novels under my belt, several short stories, and tens of thousands of words of fiction in other formats. So when I got to Light of the Outsider, I really felt free. And of course, I was much older. I was in my early 50s instead of in my 30s. So that book is a more mature work. And it's not selling as well as the typical style of book, which was Brave Men Run. I won't lie and say I don't care, but I am proud of the work that I did. I'm very proud of that book. Artistically speaking, I can sleep at night. Whereas if I had just redone Brave Men Run, or if I had said, oh, I'm going to write a fantasy novel. Let's see what's hot in fantasy novels right now. Let's see what tropes are being represented in the top-selling fantasy novels right now. If I had done that and written that, I would not have been happy. I would have felt like a hack. I probably would have lost interest, and I may not have finished it, and I certainly wouldn't want to talk about it except as a mistake to avoid. So, listen, following the tropes might put you in a familiar, convenient box where new readers who are looking for those stereotypical things, they can just pluck you right out and read your thing that is so much like all the other things. You might sell more books. You might not, though, because tropes are not a guarantee of success. You still have to be, you have to put in the work. So if you're going to put in the work, if you're going to create something that you can look at years or decades down the line and say, fuck yeah, I bled all over that book, it has my soul in it, it says exactly what I wanted it to say at that time, it represents me, and it is my artistic expression. I mean, do that, right? Wouldn't you rather do that? If you've been listening to this podcast for the past several episodes or for years, or if you've been following my work and listening to me spiel on and on about creativity, then I'm confident that you're in the same camp. If you're a brand new listener and you're maybe a brand new writer or thinking about becoming a writer or trying to write that first novel right now, embarking on that hugely, hugely difficult, long process, exhausting process, I urge you, don't write to genre, don't write to tropes. Follow your soul. Give yourself restrictions, sure. Create consistency. Make rules that you have to follow for your work, but make those rules serve the story, not the other way around. Make your art represent what you want to say. And I don't mean preachy, I mean make it represent who you are and the story that you want to tell, the story that you want to represent you. I think about Tolstoy. Even more, I think about Chekhov. Think about O. Henry. Think about Raymond Chandler. Do people say, oh, yeah, you know, a Chekhov play is a perfect example of a blah, 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 blah play? Well, you know, okay, fine. Maybe if you're a literary scholar, you do. But overall, no, it's the other way around. People read a new short story or they see a new play and they think, wow, that was Chekhovian. Not, wow, that really reminded me of this particular Chekhov play because it had this trope and that trope and that trope. Chekhov created his own genre. Chandler created his own genre. Ursula K. Le Guin created her own genre. Ray Bradbury created his own genre. And you can think of countless more, I'm sure. Be that kind of writer. Be someone who defines a body of work, not someone who is defined by other people's work. I'm not going to go as far as to say it's a question of integrity. I almost did, and I'm stopping myself short from really standing on that particular hill. Because again, you do you. And if you doing you is deliberately emulating a particular formula or style because that's what you want to do, then that's what you want to do. But I'm telling you, you got something bigger in you. You've got something more in you than connecting the dots, than filling in the story grid, or checking the boxes on the hero's journey. You've got something more in you if you will face that challenge, if you will look in yourself and do that work. And I can almost guarantee that when you do that, it will be a harder road, it will take you longer to complete, it will take you longer to find success, but it will be better. Because when the tropes change, when the genres change, the stuff that's going to last, the stuff that becomes representative of a new genre is the stuff that didn't follow the rules, that stuff that didn't, that wasn't paint by numbers. Try that. Try being your own genre. Try not to think about tropes. Certainly don't worry about the tropes you are or are not including. That's just, honestly, that's a waste of your mental energy. Okay, a little bit of business. As I mentioned, today I'm recording this episode on the 27th of August, 2022. It goes out into the world on the 29th of August, 2022. If you have subscribed, which you can do anywhere you get your podcasts, and I hope you do, that's when it'll show up in your feed. That's when you may even be listening to this. The very next day, August 30th, Tuesday, 2022, my new nonfiction book for writers, Indie Author Marketing Infrastructure, will be available at Amazon, on my own website at mattselznick.com, in the Apple Store, in the Nook Store for Barnes & Noble, in Kobo, and many other places where you can find ebooks. I encourage you to go to mattselznick.com and purchase it directly from me. You'll get the ebook and the Mobi versions. You'll have an option to send it directly to your Kindle if that's your preference. And I will get the, that's the way to get, that I get the most possible revenue from each sale when you buy it directly from me. Indie Author Marketing Infrastructure is a lean guidebook on what you need, the essential sort of tentpole ingredients that you need to be able to create a reader community around your work. So this is stuff that you should have in place, honestly, months before you release your first book. But if you've already got books out there in the world, it's not too late. You may find elements that you are lacking. You may find better choices and better reasons to make different choices with the elements that you've already established. It is not a technical book. It is a theory and practice and philosophical book. It's kind of like the reasons behind using the tools that I recommend in the ways that I recommend. Indie Author Marketing Infrastructure. Everything you need, everything you should have in place to build your reader community around your work for the long term. It's $4.99. Comes out August 30th, 2022, pretty much wherever ebooks are sold, but I hope you'll get it from mattselznick.com. The other thing that's happening, you know, I've often mentioned that if you enjoy Sonatotum and you'd like to support the show, or you would like to support my creative endeavors writ large as a whole, well, then I hope that you will become a patron of my works. You can become a patron at mattselznick.com/be-a-patron. You can pledge for as little as $3 a month. But if you pledge $5 a month or more, you get every episode of this podcast completely unedited, unproduced, and uncut, the raw deal, often including, oh, I don't know, a third to 50% more content than in the produced episode. Sometimes I go deep. Sometimes there are digressions that perhaps have value. You get that. At the $5 and up level, you also get everything I create digitally. So if you pledge, everything that I put out digitally, ebooks, MP3 files, printable PDFs, things like that, everything that I create and release while you are a patron, you're going to get. You can pledge up to $20 a month. And if you do pledge at the $20 Paramount level before August 31st, I know, it's a very short turnaround. Do that before August 31st, and I will get you everything I have released in digital form to date. That's 20 ebooks, audiobooks, full-length music albums, and music singles. About $100 worth of stuff for your $20 a month pledge. And you can cancel at any time. So do that math. You could get up to 80% off on everything I've ever done. Everything that's out there commercially.
Thanks, as always, to exceptional patron Ted Lionheart and Paramount patron J.C. Hutchins.
A great way to support the show without dipping into your wallet and just as appreciated is if you could rate and review Sonatotum anywhere you get your podcasts. iTunes, the Apple Podcasts platform, Spotify, wherever. Wherever you are listening to this podcast right now, rate and review. Rating 4 or 5 stars just takes a second or two. Writing a review takes a little longer, and I do appreciate the effort that you put into writing an honest review about why you like Sonatotum. Every rating and review helps the show move up in the search results on those platforms when people are looking for shows similar to Sonatotum. If you are an author, creator, or aspiring to be, and you have thoughts about what I have said, my little rant about tropes and genre, if you have opinions about that, I'd love to hear it. You can email me at matt@mattselznick.com. If you'd like to leave me a brief voice message, record that on your phone and email that similarly to matt@mattselznick.com. I respond to every email that I get. And if you do leave a voicemail, I will play it in the show and respond to it in the show. So we'll have a little time-shifted conversation, you and I. Okay. I hope you'll check out Indie Author Marketing Infrastructure. And I do hope that you'll become a patron for $20 a month, even if it's just for a month, so that I can send you $100 worth of my creative works. You're never going to get a better deal than that, not on my stuff. But for now, my name is Matthew Wayne Selznick. Take care.